Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bikini in the Brain. I'm joined with lovely Ashley Kottwasser.
Hello, everyone.
AKA Lady in Red.
Yes.
She's doing a monochromatic thing these days.
Yeah, you know, I've been digging it. Matchy-matchy. I need to get you on board. We need to have one of those monochromatic Mondays.
Monochromatic Mondays.
We got you. It's coming soon.
All blue.
All blue.
Head to toe. Head to toe. I'm going to commit. Underwear and socks, everything.
Everything.
Do you do shoes too? You do shoes. Yeah. Look at you.
Yeah.
So that's her thing. Monochromatic Monday. That's a thing. Do a monochromatic Monday picture and tag Ashley. Tag Ashley on Instagram. But we got a good topic today. Mm-hmm. Ashley. So behind the scenes, Ashley is the podcast manager.
Oh, I don't know about that.
she creates the topics. She creates the bullet points. It's great. It's like a full. Like a lot of work goes into it. So I really appreciate it. So today is a topic. You want to go into it, Ashley?
Yeah. So I was thinking the other day, it's going to be a while before we get a show here, March, but most people are in off season right now. So most people are in that phase where maybe they're about to start prep or they're just going to take some time off for a few months and then start prepping. Either way, shows aren't going on right now. So with that being said, what a great time to kind of discuss off-season dieting, because as you've mentioned previously, it is where the improvements are made.
Yeah.
Most improvements are made in the off-season, and the off-season can be a very slippery slope. And a lot of people think that it's just, you know, time to go crazy and eat whatever you want because it's the off-season, time to bulk up, which as you guys know, you shouldn't be bulking in bikini, but some people still think that way. So maybe it's time to discuss some off-season mistakes and all about the off-season dieting and what's the difference between off-season dieting and in-season dieting. And I think that's a great bullet point to start on. What is the difference between in-season and off-season dieting?
Yeah. So the first thing I will say about in-season and off-season dieting, I think that the mentality, especially in the bikini division, needs to not be so shifted to am I in season or am I off season? Because as more research and more science has come out, there's less and less difference between what we used to think we needed to do and what we need to do now. So we used to think, oh, you can't build any muscle in a caloric deficit whatsoever. You need to bulk in order to gain. You need to eat in order to gain muscle. And you need to eat a lot in order to gain muscle. So that was how we used to think. But now as more research comes out and more studies are proving, hey, you could be basically at maintenance calories and put on almost as much muscle as you potentially could if you were in a gaining phase. So when you look at being in a caloric deficit or even a slight caloric deficit, you can still put muscle on. People think that that's impossible. And you'll even have like bigger names saying that, oh, you need to be in a caloric surplus to gain muscle. You need to be in a caloric deficit to lose body fat. That's it, right? Well, it's not really that simple. You know, there's how your body chooses to use those calories at that given moment is based on demand. So if you worked out really, really hard and you're in a caloric deficit, like I think people think about caloric deficit too, like as a daily, like they think that it's they're always in a caloric deficit, right? Mm-hmm. So they'll be like, oh, if I burn 2000 calories, but I eat 1500 calories, I'm in a caloric deficit. Well, you're in a caloric deficit over the course of the whole day. If you did how much you ate versus how much you burned, but not every hour, every minute, you're different. Like when you ate that moment, you're in a caloric surplus because you just ate. So like you ate a 300, 400 calorie meal, you're only burning whatever 100 calories that hour, you know, you're in a caloric surplus that hour. Mm-hmm. So that's, people don't understand that it's an average, not an absolute.
So your body doesn't really see like 24 hours. Like it doesn't know
exactly
24 hours and what nutrient is going where during that time period. Exactly.
Exactly. You know, humans invented time, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like your body is recognizing it. It's not like just because you turn off based on a human equation of when the earth goes around the sun, it doesn't mean that your body is like, okay, now we're designed the same way that the earth goes around the sun. You're on and you're off at one point in your life. That's it. You're on and then you're off, and that means you're dead. And that's it. So everywhere in between, you're on, whether you're asleep or not. So yeah, your caloric deficit is based on the average of that. So getting that out of the way, I think that the scope of in season and off season needs to narrow. And that's why I get a lot of people that are like, when should I prep? And I'm like, you're already prepping. Like you should already be prepping. If you take this seriously, you're always prepping. And it's not that you're prepping for a show. You're either prepping to get better for your next show, you're prepping to get leaner for your next show. Those are the two options, like, right? If you're taking it seriously. And even if you're just like an aggressive, like fitness person trying to be your best, same thing. You're either prepping to make those improvements in your physique, or you're prepping to lean out a little bit, but still make improvements in your physique in terms of muscle gaining. Cause you can do it in a caloric deficit, you know, now I will say there's obviously a varying degree of how much muscle you could put on. The lower the calories, you know, intuitively, I would assume that it would be less total muscle you could build based on maximizing muscle gains at the most amount of calories. Yes. So the argument's there. Yes, you can maximize muscle gains if you ate in a caloric surplus, but it doesn't necessarily mean you'll get more. There's never been there's never been an ounce of muscle gain because an ounce of fat was gained. Those two don't correlate.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So do you think some of that muscle gain could be due to having more energy in general because of more calories? And with that, you could kind of supplement with maybe caffeine or something else to stimulate you to get you, I guess, not tired and more awake and energized for your workout, because the more energy you have, the better your workout. And yeah. Also could also apply to sleep as well. You know, if you don't sleep that much and you feel tired, maybe not going to have the best workout. But if you're fueled and you're well rested and energized, then you have a better workout leading to more improvements and more gains.
That's a really good, actually good question. Like that's mm-hmm. a really good, because I never really thought about that, to be honest, because that's a variable that people don't really consider. Right. So the variables in, okay, how do you maximize muscle growth? You know, when they're testing, when they're doing studies and seeing, okay, is a caloric surplus the best way to build muscle? I guess one of the variables they can't equate for is, okay, I work out harder when I have a surplus of calories. Therefore, you know, maybe that's why I'm even gaining more muscle. You know, mm-hmm. that could be a good argument. I don't know. I think that's something they can really figure out. But as far as I've seen in terms of like, you know, research has been, you know, if you put on, and to keep it really simple, if you put on 1 pound of muscle and then you put on 1 pound of fat with a gaining bulking calories, it's the same 1 pound, and it takes you, let's say it takes you 1 week to do that, but then you have to diet for 1 week to lose that 1 pound. Well, now that 1 pound cost you 2 weeks. So it's the same as if you only put on a half a pound of lean mass in 2 weeks, even though you weren't maximizing the muscle gain, but now you don't need to lose that 1 pound, right? So it's kind of nice to like think about it that way, because the way I tell people, like when I'm doing programming and whatnot, is when we're gaining, when we're losing, I want to lose about 1/4 inch a week on the waistline. Mm-hmm. 1/4 inch a week, 1/4 inch on the week on the waist, 1/4 inch a week on the hips for females. And if we're hitting that, then we're doing really good. That's about as fast as you want to go for someone. And then when it comes to gaining, I don't want to gain 1/4 inch every week, because if we did, we would just add another week of dieting to that every single time. So over the course of like a month, when I'm in a gaining phase, a lean gaining phase, I'll try to gain like just 1/4 inch on the waistline on someone, maybe 1/2 inch. That way we don't lose much time, if any, and ideally gain nothing on the waistline and just make very small improvements. But the thing is, it's all about mindset for the person, because like when we're talking about off seasons and gaining muscle and doing it in a way where you're not going to gain any body fat, the problem is that you don't see that much change happening on a weekly basis. So it takes someone who's very, very dedicated to understand, hey, like I'm not going to see the same type of progress I saw when I was dieting mm-hmm. on a weekly basis. You know, someone your size losing a pound and a half a week when you're cutting for a show and you lose 6 pounds in a month, that's like game changing, right?
Right.
2 months, 12 pounds on you is like 10% of your weight. That's game changing, right?
But, and I also wanted to kind of point out too, or ask you in a way, so when somebody did take that too far and maybe now they got all this weight to lose, as you mentioned, to start prep, you know, because they, you know, thought that they were bulking in the off season and putting on that muscle, right? That was the whole reason why they ate so much. They're like, okay, extra fat equals muscle, which obviously isn't correct. But then, you know, I guess when you start to prep, then your focus goes more towards, oh, I got to lean out now. Yeah. So all my energy and efforts are going to go more towards like cardio rather than lifting. And then in a way you're kind of counteracting all those gains that you would have yeah. made by just being more focused on cardio. Because I know for me, sometimes it's like, although I might do lifting and cardio in the same day, one of them is going to take priority. And that's usually the one that I do first. That's why I kind of try to schedule my like heavy lifts and my intense lifts like leg day. I don't do cardio on that day because I want to save all my energy and efforts for leg day. But whenever you're kind of in a pinch and you, okay, your show's in 12 weeks and you've got all this weight to lose, it's like, okay, now I can do cardio. And then I guess you could also, if you do lose weight too fast, you're also losing muscle, correct? So if you lose too fast, then to try to get to that point where you're in that safe spot to prep, and then you're consistently losing a pound a week eventually. But to get to that point initially, like, oh, I've got an extra 5 pounds to lose this time around.
Yeah.
It's like you're, if you do cut too fast, then you're going to then lose the muscle, correct?
Yeah, you'll lose a good amount of it. And that's the thing. That's why I tell people, you'll see, even you'll see, what really makes me sad is sometimes you'll see, like, there was a girl in Colorado that this, she told me this, and she was like, you know, she was always kind of struggling to be a bikini competitor, always struggling to be lean enough. And then, but then she'd always bulk. And she's like, oh, right now I just need to bulk. I'm like, no, you don't need to bulk. Like, you need to get your body fat, like, in the realistic range to be within striking distance of a show and stay there and then make improvements there, you know? But you'll see people do it all the time, especially, so you'll see it sometimes in bikini. I think the knowledge is getting out there a little bit more that that's just a dumb approach. Mm-hmm. But you'll see it a lot in bodybuilding still. A lot of guys in bodybuilding, because they just, they, which is weird because all the new school guys aren't really doing that anymore. Mm-hmm. You can see these guys staying, for the most part, pretty lean all year. And then, but if you look at like the old school guys, like Lee Priest, who was like notorious for blowing up in the off season and then, you know, cutting into his show, like, no, that's how he did it. And I'm like, well, it, you know, it worked for him. And that was, he was obviously a genetic freak on that because he could lean out really fast. And you know, you had a lot of genetic freaks that you looked at back then that were like, it didn't make sense.
And it's more forgiving for men, correct?
I mean,
I would say
it's relative to the size. So, you know, if Lee Priest could lose 2%, you know, you could lose 2%, but it wouldn't look as dramatic because he weighs 250. So yes. He's losing 5 and you're mm-hmm. losing, you know, 2.4, you know, mm-hmm. so it's not like, it's okay. Not, you know, so it's a big difference, but, yeah. And it's just a, it's not the best approach because what I tell guys is, hey, worry about your net gains. Don't worry about total gains. As soon as you can focus on net gains, then you're going to be like thinking the right way. Because net gains are, okay, I'm the same level of conditioning that I was at the last show. I'm just as lean, but now I weigh 5 more pounds. That's a net gain, right? And so we have to be realistic with how much muscle we can gain too. And if you're not even an advanced lifter, just a regular lifter, and we're talking about how much muscle you can gain, which is basically synthesizing amino acids into skeletal muscle. We're talking, if you're doing really good, if you're kicking ass, you're gonna get about 10 grams of skeletal muscle synthesized a day. So 10 grams a day would mean that, so it's 450 grams for a pound. So that would mean 45 days, you'd gain 1 pound of solid muscle, right? So over a course of a year, if you had a kick-ass year, you're probably talking 7-8 pounds. If all you did was gain the whole year and you kicked ass the whole time. So these guys that are like, oh, I'm gaining 5 pounds a month. And I'm like, dude, that's even, you know, that's, it's not going to happen. Like even guys that are like bodybuilders and they're running like PEDs and stuff, even those guys might only get twice as much. It's still not going to be crazy significant. So if you were able to gain that much muscle, you'd see guys like everyone would look like Rolly Winkler and Rami because it just, you wouldn't stop. It would just be so easy if you're putting on 5 pounds a month. If I put on 5 pounds a month, it would take me a year to look like Rami. 1 year, that'd be, or 2 years for me. Cause it'd be like a hundred and yeah, that'd be crazy. That'd be, what is that? 120 pounds in 2 years of just pure muscle. So obviously that's not gonna happen. That's just, there's a limit to it. So we gotta be smart about our approach and smart about our weekly gaining that you're gonna be gaining per week in that off season. But it's not gonna be, you don't need to be putting on a pound a week. Because you're not going to put on that much muscle. You're not even going to put on a pound of muscle in 45 days. So most people, you know, so if you're a 120 pound bikini competitor like Ashley, yeah, a pound of muscle in 45 days is realistic. That's about, if she's kicking butt and doing everything right, that's realistic. So I think the expectation, that's a good way to at least talk about the expectations here, you know, mm-hmm. in that lean gaining phase. So,
right. And you would suggest too, for some, maybe there's a newer bikini competitor that is very excited to compete and is like, okay, I'm going to start my prep and maybe have a 16-week prep, but maybe they're newer to the game, you know? And for them, they might need to take a longer off season, but not get too crazy, but take a longer off season to build that muscle first, would you suggest? Or would you just say, well, you know, we're gonna just build as we go. And if you can build even a slight bit more muscle in the improvement season, off season, then the prep, would you suggest them to have an even longer improvement season and then when they already start prepping?
Yeah, so that's a good question too. So what I like to do with like beginners is first I want to figure out their goal. I actually had a girl yesterday who contacted me and she's from the UK and she had a little bit more muscle to build. Mm-hmm. She was like, I want to compete. I've been prepping. I'm not super happy with how it's going. I want to compete, but my show that I signed up for is in 11 weeks. And I was like, wow, that's really soon. I don't usually take people on with that short of preps. I'm like, let me see what you look like. You know, mm-hmm. If you're within striking distance, we can talk about it. And so she was lean enough, like for being 11 weeks out, she was lean enough, but I was like, hey, look, you can be ready in terms of the show, in terms of your conditioning, but in terms of how much muscle you need to actually be competitive, especially in the UK market, which the UK girls are jacked. Like there's, when you get to markets, just so you guys know, like when you get to markets where there's not a lot of pro cards given out, the market is a very high level.
Because, that's a good point. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, because like if you look at Canada, mm-hmm. like Canada's still nuts, you know, yeah. Because they have two pro qualifiers a year in Canada. Mm-hmm. And then they can go do North Americans too. Yeah. So like they have North Americans, which is 8 pro cards for bikini. Mm-hmm. And then they have 2 pro qualifiers out there. I think they only give out 2 pro cards in both those shows. So in all of Canada, they give out 2 bikini pro cards a year. So you have all these girls in the United States, you know, we're giving out, I mean, close to 60 or so pro cards a year, something like that in bikini alone. So like those girls get out of the regular amateur division because then now they're in the pro division. Mm-hmm. So the level that's in Canada, like the girls coming out of Canada, the girls coming out of UK, because there's like 1 pro card in the UK. Like it might be like the top 2 in the overall, I forget. Mm-hmm. The girls over there are like, you know, a lot of them look like pros because they can't get a pro card in the US. They could only get it, you know, 1 girl in the whole country that year. So like the level's high over there, you know, because of that. It's not watered down like out here. It's like you get, you know, a lot of the girls get pro cards that are mm-hmm. that good. So anyway, I told her, I was like, you need more muscle to be competitive in that market. You know, we might be shooting for like a 5th place, a 4th place. And that might be like, that's about the best we can kind of hope for right now at this time, because you need more muscle. So what do you want to do? She's like, well, for me, it's just about getting on stage and like having, you know, having experience and then keep going and making improvements from there. Yep. And I was like, well, for you, then go for it. You know, if that's what you mm-hmm. want, she's going to coach with one of the elite coaches. But I was like, good for you, you know, go for it, you know, do your best. But the thing is, we used to think, okay, only go into a show if you're 100% ready, because you're going to lose all that time making improvements mm-hmm. that you can't make now because you're dieting. Well, now we know, well, actually you can still make improvements while you're dieting. So you doing a show and then going into the next show and being a little bit better and then keeping on going isn't really a bad idea anymore. You know, mm-hmm. it used to be a terrible idea because it's like, oh, we're going to lose 6 months of gaining
right.
because of it. Now I will say it's person per person. And I will say the more you do it, the harder it is. You'd be a good example of that because we dieted, you know, because of this, because of COVID last year. We couldn't get in the show. We kept going, like we're basically dieted the whole year. Like we prepped like the whole year because shows kept canceling on you. So like, I wouldn't say go that aggressive for that long usually mm-hmm. because you might start, you know, running into energy issues. And then because of that, by default, you're losing some size because your workouts aren't where they need to be or whatever. Yes. But yeah, you can go that route. So I would say whatever the person's goal is, if you want to go on stage and kick ass and win the overall the very first time and then get your pro card like 3 months later, mm-hmm. then I would say be close to like maintenance calories, you know, take a very strategic approach, go through all the phases, you know, and I think that people underestimate the phases of bikini and they don't kind of get it, you know. So when you first start, the first phase is like you're just bodybuilding, period. Doing everything that everyone else does, you're squatting, you might even be doing chest, you know, I don't really recommend that for bikini, but everyone kind of goes through this phase. You just go through the basics, right? You're just doing whatever workout. You look at the Arnold Schwarzenegger book, Encyclopedia Bodybuilding, and you do those workouts. And then you're like, okay, I want to take this serious. And then you go into your bikini building. You're like, okay, those bikini girls have more shoulders, they have more glutes. Then you start looking at it and you start changing your workout for that. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the next phase, and that's bikini sculpting. And that's where I will say bikini sculpting phase is probably the most boring phase because it's very repetitive and mundane and
minimal changes.
Yeah.
Just a lot over time. Just, yeah.
It sucks, you know, for a lot of people, like you're doing a lot of the same movements mm-hmm. a lot, very frequently. And people don't understand that, like, oh, I want a new workout. I want to change it up. And I'm like, you're not, like, you're doing this for sport now, not for like fun and fitness. This is for physique competition. It's yeah. different.
And I think too, it's like whenever you, like when you're in one of the beginning phases and you drop like 10 pounds and you're like, wow, this is amazing. And you're just so excited. But in that phase, the sculpting phase, it's like, you're just going to see little things tiny, like yeah. just fine tuning, like a little more shoulder pop. So even mentally, it's not as exciting as like, oh, I dropped 10 pounds yeah. in 2 months or whatever it may be. So I can totally see that. And I, you know, I've been stuck in that sculpting phase for a while. Sculpting,
we got to understand like I always explain like this to people, the funnels of working out is it's so funneled for bikini that there's just not a lot of options. Mm-hmm. So when you look at working out, you start off with your first phase and you're like, okay, so you have bodybuilding, powerlifting, CrossFit, you know, performance sports, like, you know, there's just all these different things you can do, but you're like, okay, I'm picking bodybuilding. So that eliminates all the other funnels, right? Okay. I'm going to pick bodybuilding. Okay, cool. Well, what division are you going to pick? And these, we have figure, bodybuilding, all these things. I'm going to pick bikini. Okay. There's another funnel, right? Okay. What does bikini have? Okay. Bikini has these muscles. Okay. There's another funnel. So you're funneled down to this very like limited area of working out where if you really want to be good, you really have to focus on it. And if you look at all these top girls, like if you look at the top 10 in the Olympia, probably you can probably DM any one of them and ask them, what are you working out today? And you probably have a 70% chance they're going to say glutes. Like if you did, because they're good glutes, they're shoulders, little, you know, a little bit of arms, legs, you know, it's like, but it's just a common, it's just, that's how it is, you know? So like especially when you're a newbie, when you're coming into the sport and you're going through the initial phases, that will be your first year will be your best year of working out. And then your second year, usually you'll get about half the muscle gains that you did your first year. So what I will say, if you're a new person, that is one of the times where I'll say, okay, at least go to maintenance calories, if not maybe a slight caloric surplus, if you're lean enough, so we can maximize gains, because you're going to put on so much muscle and your metabolism is going to be so affected by that muscle that you're probably going to grow into the calorie surplus that you're eating, the slight caloric surplus. So that is one time. Now, if you're very, very advanced, you're not going to make that much progress in terms of muscle growing. We know that. Then yeah, I'll keep you at maintenance calories or slightly below, just to keep your body fat in that range. But I will, when someone gets to like 18% or so and they're carrying around, I think that that's a smart percentage, 18, 19, maybe even 20% in the off season, just holding there. And I don't really need anyone to be leaner than that, because then it might start affecting them negatively hormonally, or it's, you know, for most people can't hold at 15%, you know, most people just can't hold there. So mm-hmm. yeah, so I guess that would be the answer to that
yeah.
question, like the long answer to yeah. that question. But no, I love this talk, this off season talk, because yeah. no one really talks about it off season.
Cause it's, you know, you're all excited about the improvements you see and getting stage lean. I think that's where all the excitement comes from. But in yeah. season is, I mean, it's fun to watch and see the improvements that happen when you're contest prepping and stuff like that. But in the off season, it can appear sometimes that you're going reverse, but you know, I think there is quite a big difference now than how off season used to be. And you touched on this a little bit in the beginning. It used to be way more acceptable, and most people did do this in the off season for bikini. There would be these huge weight fluctuations, even for myself. And I definitely regret that because I did have that mindset back when I first began bikini, we're talking like 2013, 14-ish era here, where I thought like, yeah, I do need to purposely get a little fluffy to put on some muscle. And, you know, it wasn't as hard for me to get leaner and leaner, but as you do that so many times, as you fluctuate so many times, it definitely takes a toll like on your body. And every single diet you do kind of ages you. And you call this the diet age,
yeah.
which I think is important to explain to people what a diet age is. And I'm sure our seasoned veterans out here know that like your first diet is your easiest. And if you've done them a few times for a few years, it's not as easy as it used to be. And if you want to go ahead and explain why that is, I think that'll be super helpful for the listeners.
It's a, you know what, it's a strange thing. And here's the thing. If you listen to like a lot of these, because I still do a ton of research and stuff. I still listen to all the, that's kind of what I do when I'm working. I'm listening to like studies or whatever. Like now it's like on there, a lot of them are on YouTube and stuff now, which is cool. But if you listen to these top guys, they will talk about the metabolism being not that affected. But you got to understand the people that they're doing these tests on are like mass groups of regular people. It's not like they're doing it on Ashley Kottwasser 10 years into competing at show number 60. You know what I mean? And so you'll see there's, and if you look at those studies and you research them, they're going to be like, okay, we're talking about adaptions in metabolism and how that's affected, how it's affected long-term with how many times you're dieting. Well, there's like one study, the Biggest Loser study, which kind of showed there was some adaptions when you had someone diet really, really hard and that stayed for years on end of their metabolism being a little bit slower of an output. But a lot of research is coming out now saying that that's not really a thing, mm-hmm. that it's really based on how much lean mass you have. And obviously if you lose lean mass in a prep, you burn less calories because you have less lean mass, right? So there's arguments for both. I can only go off of, I look at the studies, I always take those and then I look at them and obviously I always realize, okay, they don't really apply 100% to a bodybuilder.
And I also wanted to mention too, I don't know if you've ever thought of this as well, is whenever they are studying these normal people when they diet, are they really sticking 100% to their diet? I mean,
it's hard, really, it's hard to control.
If you can't even get somebody that's prepping, like, I guess you, sometimes you can't even trust if they're really sticking 100% to their diet. So why are we assuming that these regular people that aren't athletes, that don't really have a goal to lose weight, but are just doing it for the sake of study, are they really sticking to the diet? Because I'm sure that there's not somebody there 100% of the time watching every single thing they eat. Do you think that these people are going to say, no, I'm not going to go to Starbucks with my friend, even though she invited me out. Sorry, I have a study.
Yeah.
And even if there are a few that do stick to the diet completely 100%, honestly, I'm pretty sure that the other people would counteract the overall result. But I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, actually, that's a good point, too, because if you look at a lot of the studies, a lot of them are done by, a lot of them are college kids, mm-hmm. a lot of them, because it's like, they're usually done at
colleges. They're going out on the weekends with their friends, come on.
Yeah, and so this is the kind of the problem we run into with these studies thing, and that's why I always tell people, like when you first start off, and this has happened to me a few times, when you first start off, like you're, especially when you're a younger, like nutrition scientist, kind of wannabe, you know, kind of like, which was what I was, right? I was like, oh no, it has to be like this. It has to be like this because this study showed it. This study showed it, right? And the problem is like you get so stuck in that nothing else can work, even though you're seeing it work all the time with other people at like the pro level that are not doing what the study says. And you're like, no, it won't work. You're like just blatantly ignoring it. And then you just be like, oh, well, that guy does drugs. That's why. And it's like, no, it would work either way. You know, it would work with or without. So like you have to kind of evolve into understanding that, no, the meathead science does work. And sometimes the meatheads are ahead of the scientists because they're like, hey, if you did this, this works. And you're like, that doesn't make any sense. And then 10 years later, you realize, oh, someone studied it. That guy was right. That's crazy. You know, so like you got to be open to, so you had to open your mind to these things. And I see this happen with a lot of younger guys all the time. And like, they'll like get in arguments with me about it. And I'm like, who, like how many shows have you prepped again? Like how many people you prepped? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you prepped someone for a natural WNBF show. Well, congratulations, right? Like that guy wouldn't even win an overall in a small NPC show.
Don't you just love the Instagram experts?
Oh yeah. You know? Yeah. It's like the, you know, so, you know, and then you look at the guys who are like constantly winning at the upper levels and you're like, and then they're like, oh no, they're doing it wrong, but you're right. I'm like, come on, bro. Like it's pretty obvious who's right here. I'm not going to go tell, you know, Nolan Ryan how to throw pitches. So like that guy could tell me, even if it's not by the book,
I have the same frustration. All the time, yeah.
So you got to like take those studies and understand there's a lot of variables. Like that's one of them.
Yeah. Some inaccuracies.
Yeah. Because also too, like, if you had, so for example, like the perfect example would be like the Biggest Loser study, that was very controlled, right?
Yeah.
Because they were in the Biggest Loser camp, mm-hmm. TVs were on them, videos were on them all the time. If they did cheat, they'd get called out, right? And so they would be out of the study type of thing. So they tested mm-hmm. them before and after. It did show some adaptions, right? In your example, I think that there would be some argument. Yeah, they're probably college kids. They're not showing huge adaptions over the course of the time. If they ate a few meals within the study, would that be enough calories to offset them and give them like a metabolic spike during the dieting phase? Yeah, absolutely, right? So yeah, there's an argument for it. What I can say is based on relationships that I've had and people that I've prepped, the longer someone spends dieting, like in their career, it's always harder at the end, always harder at the end. And it's, there's, for me, it seems like there's no other explanation that more, the more time someone's dieting, the more their body is either recognizing that they're in a, recognizing they're in a caloric deficit again, and then they're adapting faster and slowing faster, mm-hmm. Which is what, which is kind of one of my, my theories is that, hey, the first time you diet, the body doesn't really recognize that you're in a caloric deficit. It's like, oh, we're just moving. This is life. I'm moving, I'm eating, I'm good. And then you're like, oh, I didn't eat that much today and I'm still moving. Whatever, no big deal. And like, oh, I didn't eat that much for a week. Ah, he must be moving a lot. Maybe that's what it is, right? It's not that he's eating less. And then like, it takes a long time for your body to like recognize, hey, this guy's not feeding me. I better slow down a little bit, right? It seems like it's a lot faster or something happens a lot faster the more you do it. I don't know why, but you see more often than not, someone retires because it's so much harder to diet and mm-hmm. they're not responding like they used to. And then it becomes harder and harder and harder. And then now when they were prepping their first year of shows and they're doing 20 minutes of cardio, now they're doing, you know, 2 hours just to get to the same shape. And they're mm-hmm. like, I just can't do it anymore, you know, whatever. Right. So, I do think that there are some adaptions that happen. And I'm based on, you know, watching people do it for years. I would say that I know that there's studies that are going to argue against that. But again, these aren't the people that we're working with. They're not testing, you know, Dexter Jackson, 30 years into bodybuilding from day one to day, you know, mm-hmm. whatever, 10,000 that guy did. So your
diet age isn't necessarily any correlation with your actual age, but more so how many times have you been consistently in a caloric deficit? You know what I mean? So I know there's like a lot of people out there that think that they can't get lean because they're 50 or something like that. And they think, oh, I'm too old to prep or get lean again. And maybe it has less to do with their age, but more so how many times have they dieted?
Yeah, I think that there is a factor, you know, I think it is. But the main, you know what, we can go into that issue too, which is really cool because we do get some requests for, hey, you know, talk about older bikini competitors, masters, whatever, right? So there's no physiological reason why it would be harder for you to make gains as an adult, the older you get. There's nothing physiological about the body fat you lose, the muscle you gain, none of that. It doesn't become any harder. But what happens is when you get older, you tend to have less muscle because when you were younger, you were very, very active. So when you're younger, you're more active, therefore you have more muscle, therefore you have a higher metabolic output. When you're older, you're more sedentary, you're working a desk job, whatever, you naturally lose muscle throughout the years. And then because of that, you have less, you're burning less calories. So when you see people like, oh, as soon as I hit 30, I started gaining weight and it was impossible to lose weight. And I'm like, no, as soon as you hit 30, you became lazy as shit. And now you're now because of it, you're storing more body fat. That's what happened. And you have less muscle because you're not using your body as much. Use your body more, you'll have the same metabolism, right? So, and that's the one thing about like bodybuilding is that it counters that, right? It counters that. But they say if you're doing nothing at all, you're not lifting weights, you'll lose roughly 2 pounds of lean mass, 2 to 4 pounds of lean mass every 10 years. So it doesn't seem like it's that much, but if you have, let's say if you're active, you could burn 25 calories per pound of muscle that you have. So that's 100 less calories if you lost 4 pounds of lean mass. And if you're 40, right, and you've lost it twice, now you've lost, let's say 8 pounds, that's 200 calories you're burning less per day. You know, and of course, 25 calories per pound is very active. Usually mm-hmm. it's like 8 to 12 calories per pound. But yeah, so it adds up quite a bit over the course of a year. So mm-hmm. there is no reason why you can't build muscle the way you could when you're younger. There's no reason why you can't lose fat the way you were when you're younger. The one reason would be you do have less growth hormone output, less testosterone made potentially. And that you can, these days you can just correct. So there's no, you know, before it used to be really hard, but now it's just like, oh, hey, I'm low in whatever. They're like, oh, take this now. And you can be the same as when you were born.
I have a question for you. And this is a little bit off topic because it has to do more with in-season contest prepping. But I've noticed, like, even last year, for example, when I was around the Tahoe show, I just have these random periods of time where it just seems like my metabolism just surges into overdrive. And it's like, whoa, I'm lean without really trying that hard. I don't know if that has to do with more like I'm more in the zone. So when I am working out, I don't think I'm working out as hard as I actually am, because I'm so like, yeah, let's get done. Yeah, I'm so excited for this. I don't know if it's like a mental thing, or if for some reason my metabolism is just like on fire for just because I've been, it's just like peaking or something like yeah. that. I'm not sure. Is there any explanation to that? Or is it kind of just in my mind?
There is, actually. And I'm actually, you know what? It's funny because I realized that I forgot to talk about what this is going to lead into. So I'm glad that you brought this up.
Okay.
There's going to be times where you just seem like you're burning more calories, mm-hmm. right? But what that really comes down to is a lot of it is your mood, which mm-hmm. is crazy. So I was thinking about the factors that went into your Tahoe prep. And one of them was you just moved to Vegas. And then when you just moved to Vegas, you were also walking a lot more. Yeah. And so because of that, you had a lot more neat, right? Mm-hmm. So you're neat. So neat is non-exercise activity induced thermogenesis. So there's a lot of ways of saying that, but that's basically what it is. So basically anything you're doing movement wise that isn't exercise is neat. So she was walking a lot. She was moving around a lot, moving her stuff in the house around a lot, like mm-hmm. organizing, getting ready. Even just the thought of moving and getting it all done was a lot. Yeah. And when we talked about the chess players, they burn more calories when they're thinking a lot, right? So that I think had a lot to do with it, you know, with your NEAT was really up, and because your mood was really good, you had a lot more NEAT. You were still staying active. Mm-hmm. When your mood is not bad, what happens when you're in prep? You just want to lay there, right?
Yeah. Or so for some people, they might counteract their bad mood with like food.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think mood does have a lot to do with it just because of that NEAT factor. You know, you're burning more calories by doing little things. Like if you guys are watching on YouTube, like I keep this chair's not stable, so I keep like going back and forth. That's me doing that. It causes me to burn more calories because I'm shifting and using muscles to do that. That's neat. The little fidgeting, little things like that, getting up to doing your laundry more. That's neat. Like, you know, when you're tired and you're in prep, you're like, oh, I don't want to do my laundry right now. I'll wait till next week. You know, mm-hmm. So you burn less calories because you didn't fold, you didn't this, you didn't that, right? So like people, we don't think about it, but your mood does have a lot to do with how well the prep is going to go, because your NEAT can be significantly down.
And I think too, the fact that it was like around summertime, longer days, more sunshine, whereas now it gets dark at like 5. So it's like, okay, we're just shutting it down at 5. Because I mean, even for me, I wouldn't even think about going out walking or doing anything really past dark. I don't even want to go grocery shopping past 5. Like, it's like, you know what I mean? So that time frame to be more active gets cut down in the wintertime versus summer.
Yeah. And that's why you see too, in areas where there's snow, people gain a lot more body fat up north than they do down south of the United States. So it's kind of, that's, you can look that up. People gain more fat during wintertime up north than south in the United States because of the activity level. People don't want to go outside as much, things like that. So there's that. But that leads us into what I wanted to talk about too, which I was actually going to forget, so you brought this up, is your off season setting you up for success for your in season. Mm-hmm. And so the goal of an off season is to get the calories up as high as you can without gaining any body fat. Big asterisk on that. Without gaining any body fat, or minimally gaining body fat, at least not gaining body fat to the point where it's deterring your future preps. So when you're in your off season, you're essentially prepping to prep. So you're either in prep or you're prepping to prep. So your off season, you try to get the calories up as high as you can. You try to get the cardio as low as you can while still staying healthy, of course. So basically it's pretty simple. Calories are up high, cardio is down low. Now, when you start prep, you just reduce the calories, increase the cardio a little bit. And that's like phase one. So the problem is, and this is where I run into the issue, if you've prepped before where you're doing like crazy cardio sessions, you're doing 2 hours a day, you're eating 800 calories, and you're like, now I want to prep with you, Adam, I want to do it your way. And I'm like, well, the problem is your body's already kind of used to what you were doing before, and you're still doing 40 minutes of cardio a day. And you're like, oh, it's my off season, so I'm barely doing cardio. I'm only doing 30 minutes, 40 minutes a day. And I'm like, well, that's your starting point now. You can't expect me to start prep with you and expect to do less cardio and get more results. Your body's used to doing a certain amount. So that's kind of like how you have to, so you, when you're in prep, you're trying to create a stimulus through exercise, dieting, supplements, workouts, whatever. You're just trying to create a stimulus that your body's not adapted to yet. And then that creates the need for adaption and that creates progress. But if you're coming in to a prep and you're like, your off season, you're at, you know, 1100 calories, 1000 calories, you're doing 40 minutes of cardio 6 days a week. And then you're like, okay, now I'm ready to prep. Like, well, where do we go from here? Like there's, if you're not making progress now, where do you think we're going to, what do you think is going to happen? You know, I can't say, okay, why don't you eat 1500 calories and do 20 minutes of cardio and expect you to get better results. That's going to be totally backwards for you. You're going to degress very quickly. So, that's just, I think the most important thing in the off season is setting yourself up for a good in season. And the better you do in the off season, the leaner you can stay in the off season, the higher you can get your calories up, the easier your prep's going to be. And honestly, the better you're going to look and better your prep's going to be too, because you're not going to be all like beat up throughout the prep, you know? And then you're going to be more excited like Ashley was in that last show, in the Tahoe show. And then naturally just things are just going to move a little bit easier because you're in a good mindset too. So yeah,
that makes a lot of sense. I was always curious. Like, I wonder why I was like, just seemed like I was just burning through calories like no one's business. Yeah. I didn't know. So, I mean, I think that's a great point to make, is like your mood has a lot of effect on your caloric burn and how much you move in summer versus winter and all that. So it's like one of those factors we don't even think of. And you're right. I was walking around a lot more too during that time period because it was summer. So that means when I woke up, it wasn't cold, it wasn't dark. So I was walking to Orange Theory Fitness, walking back rather than driving, because now I gotta drive because it's cold in the morning and it's still dark. So like, yeah, that is one factor that we don't even realize. So I think that's also important to take in consideration when you start prep. Is this still like, what kind of mood are you going to be in during that period of time? It's always nice to start prep with a refreshed mind to be super motivated and excited rather than you feeling like, oh, I already feel beat up and I even got to take it a step further now.
Yeah.
And it goes into that thought that you obviously you don't want to get too good at cardio, especially during the off season. And that's why we had to cut back my cardio too. Yeah. I mean, I'm in improvement season, kind of hovering towards prepping, but we're going to get into it slowly. I'm not doing my typical cardio that I would be during the in season because I don't want to become too adapted to it, because then I'll have to do twice the amount when it comes to prep time, because we need to save what you call it, saving bullets for whenever you do prep so that you can use one of those tools such as cardio to shock your body, to create a stimulus so that you can, you know, start to lose weight.
Yeah. And that's a good topic. You know, that's kind of like how the bullet thing, just so you guys know. And it's what's funny, what's funny is John Meadows uses the bullets thing too, but he's way more popular than I am. So it's like, now it's his, but I've been using that for years. And I'm like, damn it. He didn't really steal it from me. We just use the same one, but it's so funny. So like the way I think of every prep is like, there's bullets in a gun. You got a certain amount of bullets in a gun and you're going into a war against fat, right? We're trying to shoot as much fat as we can with that gun, as many bullets as we can. But the problem is like half the time people run into prep with only a few bullets, you know, and a bullet would be like, okay, now I'm doing more cardio. Now I'm changing my workout up. Now I'm, you know, eating less calories, whatever. That's a bullet, right? So you only want to shoot them at the right times. And you have to understand that there's going to be times in prep where you're going to even need to reload a little bit, add a bullet or two, take a step back. And you have to be able to recognize these signals. And that's where an experienced coach can kind of guide you. Okay, now we need to put a couple bullets in. We need to shoot a couple bullets. We need this. But a bad coach, they will shoot all their bullets right away. Like day one they're just winging it, trying to hit something. So they basically like right when you start prep, and you'll notice that'll be kind of like the sign is right when I started prep, my coach told me to do basically 1200 calories and do 40 minutes of cardio 6 days a week or whatever, even. And you're like, and that was your starting phase. Okay, where do you think your finishing phase is going to be? Because you're already going at this with bullets out of the gun. And then what happens is with that is you run out of bullets, your body starts adapting, and then the coach will start recommending drugs because they don't know any other way to get you in shape because they didn't reserve any bullets. So like that's something that's like a very real thing. And it is avoidable for most people if you just set up your off season the right way. So,
And another thing you might do is eliminate caffeine in the off season or try to taper off caffeine and pre-workouts and coffee, you know, anything that has caffeine in it, because you can save, if you get too adapted to coffee, which we all know that person that drinks like 2 pots of coffee a day, yeah. like it's nothing. They can drink it at like 7 p.m. and still go to sleep at 10 because their body has already kind of adapted and gotten used to it. So it doesn't really create that stimulus anymore. But if you kind of taper off caffeine, maybe that's something that can be beneficial to you whenever you are, you know, prepping and you're like, oh man, I'm waking up and I gotta work out. So it's like one of those things that might help you.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's actually a good thing too. So that's another bullet. Yeah, that's actually a pretty strong bullet too. Like when you're talking about fat burners, that's why when I get a lot of people, they're like, oh, I want to do a no stim fat burner. I'm like, you might as well just not do one, because that's really the whole point of the thing is the more stim you get, the better the effect is going to be. You know, that's why.
Do you remember your first cup of coffee? I do.
Do you?
Yeah. This this one figure pro, her name is Allison. She introduced me to my first coffee back in like 2014, and I never had it.
Really?
It was from Dunkin'. It was half blueberry, half vanilla, sugar-free. And then she had a little stevia I could add. And I was like, oh, this is good. It was iced coffee. I was like, whoa, this is great.
That's funny. You know who's never had coffee? Mike Tyson.
Oh, I heard that on
his never had a cup of coffee.
Joe's podcast.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Wow. But definitely caffeine doesn't do much for me anymore these days, unfortunately, but yeah. It used to.
Yeah, so that's another thing too. So like, yeah, desensitizing yourself to certain things, like, and you could still get to take pre-workout that doesn't have caffeine in it, that'll still give you a better of a pump. You know, it's not going to have like the thermogenic effect like caffeine would, but it's going to give you a better pump. So yeah, so I guess that's a good off season. It might even be like a 2-part thing, but that's a good off season one, you know, yes. type of thing.
Right? I want you to explain one more thing though. Hopefully you can do it briefly if you're trying to end this, Adam. So you made a video on your IGTV last week, how to create a diet or start. And I think it might be helpful to explain to people. Like maybe they don't have the ability to get their metabolism tested. We do have a metabolism testing system at the Contest Prep Center. So we're lucky, but some people aren't. And they don't know, dang, I don't know what my resting calories are supposed to be. And they don't know how to create a diet or start off season. Like how much should I increase my calories to find that resting metabolic rate?
Yeah, actually that's a good one too. And that's pretty simple to do. So one, there is a video I have on IGTV, and there's also one I have on YouTube called how to set up a diet, something like that. But what you use is this equation called the Harris-Benedict formula. And it'll walk you through the steps you need to take to do that. And you can even type in Harris-Benedict equation or Harris-Benedict formula on DuckDuckGo. And it'll tell you, I always say DuckDuckGo, not Google now. There's a reason. So you do it on DuckDuckGo, better server. They don't track you. You can type it in and they'll give you a basic calorie, and then you can just multiply it by your activity level. So if you type in that, it'll tell you where your starting point is. And that's a good starting point, but everyone's different. That's not accurate like to a T for pretty much anyone, but it gives you a good starting point. So what I do there is then I would say, okay, to check your weight, check your measurements, do that calories for a week. If you gain a significant amount of weight, well, then you're overshooting. If you lose a significant amount of weight, well, then you're undershooting. And then you know what to do from there. Well, then you increase your calories to where you want them to if you're too low, or you decrease them if you're too high to where you want them to, until you start getting the type of result that you're wanting to get. But it's pretty simple, but you do need to have that testing period. So the only thing the metabolic testing device is called an indirect calorimeter. The only thing it does is it gives me the ability to skip that initial 1 to 2 weeks where I'm kind of trying to figure out where this person's calories are. But I've been doing it so long that I rarely miss it now. Like you can kind of see it based on the person. Like if they're like, oh, I'm always dieting and I'm just not losing weight, well, they're operating a little slower. You know, if someone's like, oh, I'm always hungry and I'm always shredded, like they send in their first pictures and they're shredded, I'm like, oh, they're probably a little faster than that, right? So it's like, I get pretty close to it nowadays, but I mean, I'm in 20 years, you know? So, but that is a good way of doing it. Do your testing, so Harris-Benedict, seeing what your resting metabolic rate is, multiply it by your activity level. And then the formula is all online. And then from there, you just test it for a week. And then you're going to have a lot of information after that first week. That's why when people are like, what diet should I be on? Like, they'll just DM me. And I'm like, dude, I have no idea.
Yeah, I get that too. And it's like, you don't know anything about them. Yeah. Like, and even I feel like people sometimes even ask me what mine is at, what my macros are at, but they don't know me either. So yeah. They don't know how much I burn in a day. They don't know my activity level or what my diet is. So it's kind of like, you know, to ask my macros would kind of just be giving kind of irrelevant information if they're trying to copy it.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I always say, like, when I make a video with my diet in it, I'm like, this is what works for me. This is my diet. Doesn't mean it's going to work for you. You could have totally different genetics, goals, metabolic rate, activity level than I do. So it's not really relevant, but
yeah, you know. No, totally. Because, and then what's also not taken into account when people ask you is like your extreme history, you know, which is you were a track athlete that had to be a certain weight, you know, which means you were dieting for years before you were even dieting for physique. So like, yeah, you grew up pretty much dieting. So like, yeah, you do burn less calories. You do, you know, we do go lower in calories that I'd like to go in prep, but it is what it is.
But I mean, I will say my resting metabolic rate, well, we tested it, what, 2 years ago, so 2018, it wasn't too bad. It was like 1500,
which
I mean, I was expecting it to be lower because I have dieted so many times, but luckily it didn't seem to be that drastic. But I will say I am one of those people that I don't really get, it's not like I'm sitting here starving. I don't really get hungry that often. Like, I feel like my diet is fitting for me. I feel great. My health is good. Every test I've taken, blood work and all that comes back pretty good. So, I mean, I just am, you know, a lower calorie kind of person, and that's fine with me. And luckily for me is I don't, after working with you, you know, I don't do that bulking thing anymore. So I try to stay quite lean so that when I do prep, it's not like something drastic. I'm not going super, super low calorie and I'm not doing super high amounts of cardio like that. So the key for me is to stay kind of within range during the off season so that I don't have to beat my body up so badly and go super low with the calories.
Yeah. It's funny. I'll get people like that'll be like, no, I just have to put on, like, maybe your girls can do it, but I have to put on 20 pounds or else I won't make any progress. And I'm like, no, you've never tried a different way and you like to be a little piggy in the off season. That's the reality with that. Yeah. You're justifying not trying something new because you like to eat. Mm-hmm. That's the reality of that. Let's just call that what it is. And so, and if that's you, whatever, you do what you think is best for you. I don't think that's the smartest approach, but you know, some people like to go and diet super, super hard and eat super, super hard in the off season. Whatever. I don't think it's the best, but go for it.
Maybe so, that's even a mental thing too. Like that in order for them, I've heard the argument too, in order for somebody to get motivated to lose weight, they almost have to go past the point of being comfortable with their body, if that makes sense. Yeah. To be like, oh, I've passed my limits. I got to start dieting now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a mental thing. That's definitely, that's a question more for somebody that's like Celeste, for example, that's more into the psychological side of the sport. But in order, like, or just the fact that they need to, I don't know. I don't know why people like the drastic opposites for mental reasons. I don't.
Yeah, I don't
know. I like being lean and, you know, safe. You know, approach.
that's my approach. It works. I've been using it for years. So I don't know. But so anyway, guys, I guess that is it. Thank you so much for listening. I think that is it. And as you guys know, especially people that are on Team Elite Physique, we are going to do a secret grand opening in February. Yeah, for the Prep Center. And then we're going to do a real grand opening, which unfortunately we're going to be able to do like a full grand opening like at the same hour because of COVID and our restrictions on how many people we can have in there. But that's going to be announced soon, but look for it with Angel Competition bikinis, potentially, most likely. And the Shoe Fairy towards the end of February, we're going to have like opposing seminars and things like that. And it should be, it looks like that's going to happen. And then
towards the
end of February. So, but before that, we're going to have secret workouts for the team, secret grand openings. And so I'll be announcing that pretty soon. And anyways, guys, thanks so much for listening. Anything you want to give, Ash?
Oh, thank you guys so much for listening to us. We really appreciate it.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next time. Thank you so much.